This is a production of the White Dragon Podcast Network, WDPN, bringing you the very best in internet talk radio.
Hey, all you pet stylists, you found the Groom Pod. Welcome to our virtual salon. My name is Susie, and I'm your host. I'm a mobile groomer from Seattle, Washington, and anyone who knows me will tell you I love to talk, especially about my job. One of my favorite people to talk to is my friend and mentor and star of the show from Tucson, Arizona, and groomblog.blogspot.com, Miss Barbara Bird.
Hello, groomers! Hi, Susie!
Hi, Barbara, and welcome, groomers, to episode 24 of the Groom Pod. This week, we're going to discuss a segment that they aired on Good Morning America. We're going to talk a little bit about wet clipping. We're going to learn about Proposition 65 in California. And we're going to have an interview with Terry DiMarino. I invite you guys to be part of the Facebook group by joining us at facebook.com/groups/thegroompod. You can also find the Groom Pod on Stitcher and iTunes and at our website, thegroompod.com. And remember to explore the White Dragon Podcast Network and check out all of the other shows they have available. What's new this week? Brought to you by Barbara's Shopping Site. Shop for specialty grooming items at www.shop.bieber.biz. Shop with a groomer. It's good karma. All right, what's new this week, Barbara?
Well, just a little follow-up on last week. Remember, we talked about no-poo conditioner cleaning. Well,
yes.
I tried it on myself. I used my Hair One conditioning cleaner on my own hair, and it came out kind of icky.
Yeah.
So right now, it just didn't have the same feeling out of the shower. And then when I put a little bit of gel in there to give it some body, my hair got gummy. And I really didn't, instead of having nice curls, it just kind of is sticking out all over. I wasn't real happy. I probably will give it one more try, but for me, so far, the co-wash was a thumbs down.
Okay, so just to describe what Barbara's hair looks like this morning.
Oh, you're mean.
It looks like she has ridden a roller coaster in the rain, and it's kind of, so it's just, it does not look its normal, fresh, fabulous self, Barbara.
Now, seeing it's kind of flat and it kind of fell down, it's not holding its shape even with a little bit of product in there. I'm just not happy with it at all. It doesn't feel real great either.
You are going to try it again?
Yeah, well, I don't like to do a one strike you're out on anything, you know?
Okay.
I'll probably give it another try, but first I'll wash it with shampoo, and then maybe the next time I'll try the co-wash again.
Well, we will revisit that at another time then. So I wanted to tell you about listener Stacy Ward, who emailed me about a symposium they are having in August that is called the Cat Symposium. And it's at the Meowser Pet Salon in Salt Lake City. And it is a holistic pet event.
Oh,
and
cool.
Yeah. So it's August 15th and 16th. And she's going to write us up a little bit of a review on what's going to happen there. And then I'm going to read it on the show. But I did want to give it a mention because she's a listener. So, Stacy, thanks for giving us the heads up. And I look forward to the information you're going to send us. All right. So let's talk about that Good Morning America segment.
I didn't really see it, but I've heard a lot about it. Did you see it?
So I started to watch it, and then I thought, oh, this is a little inflammatory. Maybe I will turn it back off. And then when one of our listeners made a request that we comment on it, I thought, well, I'll go back and look at it again. And I looked at it, and my first impression with it was, oh, those poor pet owners, because stuff does happen at the grooming salon, which of course they don't really know exactly what happened in the salon. It was all from the owner's point of view. It would be horrific if I took my dog in and something like that had happened. So that was my first gut reaction. What have you heard about it?
I had a couple of private messages. One person wanted me to spearhead some kind of a public awareness campaign or something, and I had to decline the invitation because I just don't have any time on my plate. Oh, let me tell you what happened. I got an email from SuperZoo, and I have to submit all of my handouts for my presentations, any handouts that I'm going to have for my presentations in late July. I have to submit the handouts by June 1st.
Uh-oh.
Big crisis in my life. So I've got...
Okay, well, that wraps it up for this week on the Groom Pod.
No, but you know what I'm going to be doing for the next week. I mean, usually I make the handout up last to kind of summarize or pull out some salient points. And so I just got to scramble. And, you know, I've just got so much. I had to sort of overwhelm her with information about my life. You know, people want to use my name, or they want somebody that's recognized in the industry. And I told her, you know, pet owners aren't going to know me from anybody. You know, like, it doesn't even, it might have a little bit of a dent that I'm a certified master groomer, but only if we make that out to be meaningful. And I think that that's a point that comes up.
And that was kind of their focus, was that when you choose a groomer, you need to choose somebody who's been certified. Now, they really have no idea what that even means, but they're talking about legislation in the segment to, you know, force people to get certified or to get licensing or something like that. And that is an area in which I have generally stayed out of commenting on, but I do realize we have this format at this point, and people will look to us for discussion, at least. So
I don't want to get into the argument. Always these events, these tragic events that happen, and, you know, tragic events happen at the veterinarians. I had a customer in yesterday, and she has a rescued Bichon mix, and it was her third try at adopting a mix, and the first one died. The second one died on the operating table being spayed, and they lied to her about it, and they flim-flammed around it, and they made her wait 2 days before they delivered the news. Then the truth came out. You know, tragic events happen at the veterinarians as well as at the groomers, and you don't see them coming to light. And what frightens me is the PETA recommendation that you groom your own, or you insist on staying with your dog while it's being groomed at the groomers. And, you know, we know that owners probably injure pets more self-grooming, cutting them, dislocating, luxating patellas, you know, various things happen, are more likely to happen with inexperienced owner groomers than with experienced, dedicated professionals. And if you choose and insist on staying with your pet, you're creating a distraction that is increasing the hazard potential of your pet's grooming, because your pet is going to be looking to the owner and not focusing with the groomer on what we're doing on the table. So I have feelings about that. But rather than get into that age-old argument about should our industry be licensing, you know, and I do think that ultimately there should be some regulation, at least similar to what is in the hairdressing field. But the more important question is, like, what can we as everyday groomers do to overcome this image that was just put out to the public? And I think that it's up to us to market ourselves as prioritizing the safety of your pet in our salon. You know, and if we are certified, this is a good time to claim that and own that. and perhaps lift up others who are certified, because it is an extra step that we've taken. And even though it certainly doesn't ensure that a groomer is a more safe groomer, it does say something to the commitment to the profession that this certified groomer has acted upon.
Well, the question was posed, do we try to approach Good Morning America from the groomer's point of view and try to perhaps present the viewers of Good Morning America with ways to choose a groomer you're comfortable with? Do we try to put something forward there as a grooming industry?
Do we go to battle with
Good Morning or let America? It go?
Well, I don't know. My answer is I don't know. I'm tempted to write something about that this does disservice to the thousands of groomers who have dedicated their lives. I mean, there's a lot of groomers that are not just groomers. They're in it. They're in it for the long haul. They're in it for the sake of the pets. They're committed to safety of pets in their care, and accidents happen. I don't know the details of this horrific event.
I don't think they do either, really.
Right. And I think I think that there are groomers that are less concerned, and there are grooming situations that are more prone to accidents and abuse. And these are situations where there's a lot of pressure on groomers to produce volume, high volume shops where there's not working as a team. And groomers are pressured to put out more dogs, more dogs, more dogs, and they're not encouraged to help each other. And in fact, they compete with each other for percentages of the income, and it's all on volume production. And you know, a situation in a grooming shop, it can get kind of stressful and out of hand with just a single overly matted dog that soaks up too much time of somebody's, and then everybody else is running behind. And we need to acknowledge that sometimes we overbook ourselves, that groomers, rather than charging a price that they need to do a good job safely, they're just trying to leave prices as they are and do more dogs.
Right.
Those kind of situations. And when you can't ask a coworker to help you hold a dog.
Yeah, that's not a healthy environment.
It's not a healthy environment. And, you know, this is all internal stuff that we don't want to bother GMA with all of that. But the truth is, there are thousands of dedicated, devoted, careful groomers who have made this a life occupation. I mean, like me, I've put in 45 years into this industry, and they're just dismissing me in that thing. They're just totally dismissing me.
That's why I'm thinking whether I want to do it or not. My thought is if someone goes and emails a producer and says, hey, we saw the segment, we feel like we need to step up for the grooming side of things, and we would love to present to you a segment about how to choose a groomer that's certified and that is thoughtful, that presents grooming in a more positive light and really respects the groomers out there who do the right thing. If I do that, I fear that I better be ready to fly to New York. That's where I'm kind of torn with how much do I want to get involved.
Yeah, well, me too.
Because you've got a lot on your plate. I'll have to think about it. I will consider it, though, and that's what I said, I would consider it. On that note, I would mention that June 7th, I'm leaving for a cruise to Alaska. Therefore, the Groom Pod will be on hiatus, or will have a best of show for 2 weeks. And this is going to help Barbara get prepared for her Super Zoo stuff and do her writing that she needs to do. And it'll give me a little bit of a break so that I can go be on vacation and really actually be on vacation. So I just wanted to let everybody know that.
I'm so proud of you for having an actual vacation, and I've just got to somehow prioritize that for myself someday. You know, it's been decades since I've had a proper vacation.
Well, just in case you don't, I'm going to take 2 weeks off in August and then another 5 days in September. So if you're not
my hero,
Yeah, well,
you know,
I watched
the groomer. You know, groomers in Europe, people, workers in Europe, they take holidays all the time.
Yep.
All the time, and they don't feel guilty, and they don't worry about their clientele, and, you know, businesses close. I mean, it happens all over the UK. It's just dog grooming, people.
Take a vacation.
And the hair will be there.
Yes, and the people will wait.
Ready, groomers? Here comes our first appointment.
All right, well, let's head over to our first appointment, and that is about wet shave.
One of the tips that I can give people about wet clipping is that it needs to be really wet. I mean, and some people say that they bathe the dog and then they blow the coat from the roots out a little bit. I'm not sure that that really makes that much of a difference. For me, I bathe the dog, I heavily condition the dog, lightly rinse it, leaving a lot of that conditioner in, and then I just blot it. I do not soak up, I don't towel it real well. I just leave it dripping wet on my table and start clipping.
Tell me, what dog is a good candidate for wet clipping? When you see it, what does the dog look like on your table, and when you go, oh my God, I'm gonna have to wet clip that dog?
Well, Doodles are a good example, because that coat often gets badly matted in some areas. You know, you need to assess the extent of the matting, and you don't really know what you're getting in for until you start trying to blow out some, because coat texture can make a big difference in whether something is going to blow out or not. But you generally, I wet clipped a doodle a week ago. What's a doodle that's been a regular customer of mine every 6 weeks, but she's been ill and she hadn't been groomed for about 3 months, and she was a big mess. And being ill included some skin issues, and so she had chewed and gnawed on herself, and she had really made mats that were tight. And you know, I could tell if you take your fingers and try to pull apart the hair, if you can't pull apart the hair at all with your hands, then it's more of a candidate to have to shave. And so I just plunged in with Georgie, and I shaved her down with a 5-blade, and then I was able to finish her with the snap-on comb that's equivalent to a 4. And you know, here's the deal: a wet clip finish is not as even and perfect as a straight clip, because wet clipping will give you more unevenness. In some areas it'll go shorter, and then other areas it'll leave it longer, but overall it gives an appearance of more length. And if the people are willing to accept that it's going to be a little rough looking, it's a good option. And you know what, doodle people can accept that, because they'll do anything for a little more length. They just hate that 7-blade all over look. And if you can finish it to a rough looking 4 or a 3, they are so happy, and the dog seems to have more substance and more bone, and just a more doodly appearance.
Okay, so you get the dog in, so let's call it a doodle. So you get your doodle in, you put it in the bathtub, and you start soaping it up with the Bathing Beauty, and you realize this is going to be a candidate for a wet shave. So you...
I usually identify before, and I tell my bather, I'm going to wet shave this one.
Okay. So the dog goes in the tub and you wash it like regular?
Yeah, you just wash it like regular. Okay. You know, what's the worst case is that you have to wash them again after the wet shave. But I've never had that happen on a big dog. I've only had that happen on like a farm dog type wet shave. And, a really filthy dog, but most house pets, you can just bathe them thoroughly and condition well,
Okay, and like conditioning, are you using a creamier conditioner or a thinner conditioner?
I use a creamier conditioner when I wet shave. Hey, Bella's excited about wet shaving.
Yes, she is. We appreciate her excitement, too.
She's letting us know it's Sunday.
So, if you're going to do a wet shave, give me a conditioner, a brand name conditioner that you would use for wet shaving.
Show Seasons Quench. Used to use the Sally's Cure Care, but you know, that's been taken off the market, so I don't think people can find that anymore. Any of the kind of creamier, pourable, thicker conditioners work really well for wet shaving because it just lubes the hair up real well in its wet state.
Okay, so you've worked that conditioner in through and you've kind of rinsed it out, but you've left it.
Yeah, I just lightly rinse and leave a lot of conditioner in the coat.
And you're using a plugged-in clipper, right? Cord in the wall.
Here's the deal. There's electric issues. If you use a plug-in-the-wall corded clipper, you do want to use a full-size clipper on most wet shaves. If you use a plug-in, you need to have a GFCI outlet that protects you from electrocution in the presence of water. Very important. If you use a cordless, like the new Oster Volt, that's a good, that clipper has good power. It's a single speed, but it has a lot of torque. Goes through just about anything. You don't have to worry about shock if you're using a cordless clipper. Okay. So you plug into a GFCI. I have a GFCI outlet on my wall. It's a added thing that I plugged into the wall outlet that I got at Home Depot that I can use with a single cord, single plug, and make it be a GFCI protected instrument.
It's always done with a blade, right? Never a comb.
I think some people have done it with a comb, but I think it's a little bit harder to clip through mats with a comb. You can certainly try it. I'm sure that Debbie Hilly has succeeded in doing that. Debbie Hilly is here again, we're speaking about Miss Hilly. She's an important groomer in our industry, and she advocated and talked about wet clipping years and years ago when it was kind of unheard of.
I remember.
And I think she has successfully used snap-on combs and wet clipping. I usually prefer to use a blade. And you, whatever blade you can get through most of the hair. Now, there may be areas where you have to go to a closer blade. Here again, you have to prepare the client that there may be some unevenness. Our rule about clipping to the lowest common denominator, that doesn't apply. When you're doing wet clipping, it's clipping to the highest common denominator. You want to use the longest blade you can get through most of the coat.
What's that do to your blade?
Well, it can gum it up. That hair can collect in the blade. And so you have to kind of watch your blade as you clip. And if it's starting to gather hair in the blade, you want to stop and like blow it off or brush it out. And certainly as soon as you're finished with a wet clip, you want to clean and re-oil any blades that you used right away. Don't hesitate. Don't let them sit around till the next day. Yeah, it'll be rusted solid, especially if you live in a humid area. I'm very lucky living in Arizona. It forgives me for many things. It's not going to hurt your blade. And one of the real benefits of clipping wet is that your blades won't heat up the same as they do in a dry clip because the moisture of the water keeps the blades cool.
Great
so you
point.
Can get a, yeah, it's a very, it's big advantage. And you just work the blade through the hair much the same as you would if it was a dry clip, kind of being slow. And in some areas you have to kind of work through it.
Where's your dog? Is your dog on the table or is your dog still in the bathtub?
No, I never do it in the bathtub. I don't want to use electricity around the porcelain or metal of a tub. I do it on the table. Yeah, I do it on the table, and I kind of scoop up the hair into a big, wet, muggy pile. And then you just, you know, it's really easier to clean up than dry hair because it all stays put. and you just kind of rake it up. And
no clipper vac though. Wah wah.
Well, I've used the clipper vac with wet clipping, and if you do that, you need to blow through your hose real good after you clip, so that it doesn't hair doesn't collect. And that I don't think it's not a total deal breaker for a thing. But what's important is that you keep the hair wet. And if you slow down and the hair's starting to dry, it's going to clip less good. So I keep a spray bottle of water, and I will actually spray an area wet again if it's gotten to be damp. Because have you ever tried to clip a damp cocker coat? And you know, it's just a mess and you can't clip through it. And the clippers want to go on top of the damp hair and not through it. Well, for that same reason, you want to keep that hair wet as you clip.
Okay. After you're done clipping, do you rewash the dog?
Not necessarily. Only if you think it's really going to need it. Or if you've put in an awful lot of conditioner and left it in. But most often, I just dry the dog. You can start to dry the dog and you're immediately going to know if it's still dirty. I just don't have that happen. You know, I use the Bathing Beauty. I get the dogs really clean.
That conditioner is okay.
Yeah, well, it's not going to do anything worse than what happened to my hair this week.
Okay, remember, I'm looking at you.
It's a doodle look. Come on.
So dry the dog off and then go for the longest common denominator comb that's going to make it look fairly even and just kind of straighten it out.
Yeah, yeah. And you'll find some areas, there'll be some really long areas that you need to clip off. You definitely need to clip over a wet clip after you've, but you've saved a whole lot of time. I probably wet clipped that big doodle, and she was big and very matted, and it was slow going in some areas, but I don't think it took me longer than 15 minutes to clip the whole thing down. So I saved time. I didn't risk burning the dog because my clippers didn't get hot. It didn't involve a lot of tugging. She tolerated it really well. Then in the reclip, that's when I used my clipper vac to help me even it out.
But of course.
And you know what? Georgie came out looking really pretty good. I mean, amazingly good for what was going on with that coat.
So can you wet clip a cat? This just came to me. I didn't even write it down, but could you wet clip a thoroughly matted cat? It seems like it might be more risky with their fine paper thin skin.
Any clipping of cats is more risky. If you're using a 10, you could use a 10 blade on a cat wet and leave it fuzzy.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I can't see the reason not to. If it's going to be quicker, yeah. I've never done that because I really don't like to bathe cats unless they're really oily or greasy.
Hey, Debbie, if you're out there listening, let us know if you can shave a wet cat.
Yeah, I bet you can.
Or if anyone else has done it.
I think it would be a good idea.
You know what else sounds good? Shopping. Right. Shopping at Amazon.com. I enjoy that.
Good job.
Yep, and I just want to extend a personal thank you to Barbara, who is continuing to shop through the Amazon banner on our website.
Every week. I've become an addict.
Talk about a painless way to help out the show. You just go down to the website, roll down to the bottom of the show notes, and click on the Amazon banner, and it takes you into the pet department. But you can shop anywhere in Amazon from that. And the Groom Pod gets a bit of a supplemental income off of your purchase. It doesn't cost you anything more. And thank you, Barbara, for doing that with regularity, because I can watch and see that someone's been clicking on there.
Well, at least one of those someones is me.
For you listeners out there who are also clicking on the banner, we really, really appreciate it. It does help out the show, and it's a way to help out the show without really causing too much pain for everybody involved. So thank you for that.
the definition du jour.
And now it's time for our definition du jour. So what is the definition du jour?
Well, I'm going to just not really call it a definition. I want to talk about a little ingredient news item that came across my desk this week. And the news item was that California Proposition 65 has filed notice of intent to add aloe vera whole leaf extract and golden seal root extract to its list of known carcinogens.
Now, aren't those two plant-based items that have been used for centuries?
Well, yes, but here's the deal. There was, I haven't looked deeply into the golden seal thing, but that was alarming because I know I've used golden seal root extract to heal wounds on pets before. But let's talk a little bit about what is California Proposition 65 and kind of what this means. Proposition 65 is an agency in California that stands for California Office of Environmental Health Hazards Assessment. And it came about as a result of the Safe Drinking Water and Toxic Enforcement Act of 1986. Once an item gets listed on the California list, it must include any labels of products that contain that item, that ingredient, must include a warning that this product contains an ingredient that has been determined to be carcinogenic by Proposition 65 of California. They don't really make you take it off the market or anything like that, but you have to include this warning. And we see that on some blade cleaning products that contain phenol. I talked about that ingredient before. So, and what I noticed is that some companies comply and put that notice on. So Clipperside has the notice and the Laube Cool Lube has that notice. But H42, which also contains phenol, does not have that notice on their label. So there must be not terrific enforcement of this regulation. However, now it's one thing to have a warning for a chemical like phenol, but it's another thing to have a warning on an aloe vera extract, because that's alarming. And what the fine print tells us is that this warning applies only to whole leaf extract. It does not apply to aloe vera gel or plain aloe vera extract, just whole leaf extract. And what we find is that there's not a lot of use of whole leaf extract. Moreover, the listing of aloe vera whole leaf extract as a carcinogen is based on a study by the International Agency for Research on Cancer, has determined the ingredient to be a carcinogen based on a 2-year study of rats and mice where they had 0.5% to 3% whole leaf extract in their drinking water for 2 years, and it produced some cancers of the large intestine and some indications of other tissue abnormalities. So that's oral toxicity. And people drink a lot of aloe.
They sure do.
Yeah, but it has nothing to do with the cosmetic use. And here's the deal. Proposition 65 allows for a period where there can be comments and arguments, but they do not entertain any arguments about usage and dosage. They will only allow comments about whether or not that study was meaningful. They do not review their ingredients in the same way that the Cosmetic Ingredient Review Board, that panel reviews ingredients over a 2-year period of time where it It gets every study ever been done, published, non-published, whatever, that gathers all the information they can, separates and organizes the information, and then assesses each part of it, and then leaves it open for a year. People can add studies, whether they're maybe non-published studies, or make comments and arguments, and then they will do a final assessment, and it is very much weighs how an ingredient is used and the percentages of usage. This Proposition 65, once the IARC identifies something as producing cancer, it becomes a carcinogen. I mean, this was non-decolorant. You know, sometimes they treat the most of the aloe vera products that we use in cosmetics have been decolorized. This was non-decolorized. This was whole leaf extract aloe vera. Usually you find aloe vera gel or just the inside of the aloe plant being used. This warning and this listing does not apply to those things. The concern, though, because aloe is one of those ingredients that is used in little amounts here and there just to instill confidence in a product. Well, what's right. going to happen to that confidence once this product is listed as carcinogenic by Proposition 65 California? It's going to erode that consumer confidence in the name aloe vera.
This type of regulation makes me want to follow the money and see who has it out against the aloe vera growers of America or whoever it is. Why are they picking on this particular item? You know?
Well, you know what? They're not picking on it because California has a mandate. This was added under what they call the labor code mechanism. I did do a little bit of reading about it. And this labor code mechanism requires that all substances identified by IARC as human or animal carcinogens must be added to the Proposition 65 list. So it's a side door that they bring in. Now, who identified that? Who brought
That's
it to their attention? And that is a good point. And
it's fish.
Truly,
it's fish. That's all I'm saying.
I'm saying that the whole Proposition 65 is fear-based.
Yep.
And feeds fear. And, you know, this is just a current example and one that kind of concerns me because I know that the public is not going to take the time to differentiate between whole leaf, non-decolorized extract and the kinds of extracts. And they're not going to, there's nothing, once they're on the list, you have to dig around to find out that this was oral toxicity study. It has nothing to do with dermal absorption or dermal toxicity or sensitivity or any of that. It has to do with 1, 2, or 3% in the drinking water every single day for 2 years.
That's a lot of exposure.
That's a lot of exposure.
Thanks for letting us know about that. That's it. We'll be watching that in the future to see what happens.
It's just kind of interesting to know, you know, like what can happen with ingredients and how they're regulated and how they're not regulated.
That is interesting. And now I want to invite you guys to listen to the other shows on the White Dragon Podcast Network. And they include Two Men and a Mouse and Mouselanious, which are both two Disney shows. You've got Bat Squad Radio, Geek's Watchtower. There's a bunch of shows over there. They're really great. I'm going to run a little promo for them. And then we're going to be back with our At the Table segment, which is an interview with Terry DiMarino.
Hey, Susie, can I add a little shout out for my favorite other blog that isn't, unfortunately, with our network?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I want to remind our listeners that I am a big follower of the Beauty Brains, and they have a podcast that they do weekly that I think is a must listen. And it really will tune you into what's happening in the beauty industry. And if you like my point of view and my kind of critical thinking about ingredients and claims about ingredients, you're going to love the Beauty Brains. So that's my little shout out.
Excellent. I appreciate the Beauty Brains as well.
Hey everyone, it's your good pal Kev from the White Dragon Podcast Network, shamelessly interrupting your enjoyment of this tremendous WDPN podcast you're listening to basically shill to you. Bear with me here, folks, this will be brief. I know what you're all thinking. You're loving the tremendous audio spectacle currently delighting your auditory senses, and you're lamenting the fact that the stars of the WDPN are only around for you 1 hour per week, right? Well, you're wrong. We've got a whole slew of shows that will delight, entertain, and captivate you all week long. And the best part is that we've got something for everyone. Are you looking for something your whole family can enjoy? Well, look no further than Two Men and the Mouse, the flagship show of WDPN focusing on the magic and wonder of Walt Disney World. Pete Mandel and myself share our love of the most magical place on Earth as we count down the latest and greatest news of the week before diving deep into a featured topic. Maybe you're a fan of geek TV and movies. You love the world established in shows such as Arrow, Gotham, The Flash, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Doctor Who, and so many more. Well, for you, we've got the Geek Watchtower. I'm joined each week by a special guest host as we review the latest installments of our favorite geek-centric media. Sometimes, though, the universe of geek pop culture can be a little too all-consuming and you need to go broad. That's why we've got Bat Squad Radio, hosted by the YouTube comedy trio known as the New Jersey Bat Squad. You'll hear me as Kev L, along with Bat Dave and Spider Denny, detailing the goings-on throughout all of geekdom. Perhaps you're more of a sports entertainment fan. Well, WDPN's got that covered as well. Step inside the world of professional wrestling with Ring Ropes Radio, the all-new pro wrestling podcast of WDPN. Kevin Clark and I present to you all the viewpoints of two 10-plus years veterans of the wrestling business and supplement that with special interviews with the stars of wrestling's past, present, and future. Want more information on where you can find this plethora of internet audio entertainment? Well, head over to Facebook.com/WD Podcast Network and give us a like for all the latest news and new shows and episodes. Okay, I'm all done. I told you it would be quick. Well, this wasn't exactly quick, but whatever. Back to the show. Enjoy it, and thank you for listening to the White Dragon Podcast Network.
Let me start off the At the Table segment with an apology about Linda's audio. I thought Dave's audio was bad. Linda's audio was way worse. There were so many of you out there in the Northwest Grooming Show who made it onto the podcast in the background of that audio. So I want to let everybody know that in the future, we are going to do another interview with Linda, also another interview with Dave, and have them the way that I do the interviews, do the show with you over Google Hangout, so that we'll get some better audio on that. So Terry is an industry leader. She's been around for a little while. She was a salon owner, a mobile groomer, award-winning competitor, and gold-winning groom team member. She's won two Cardinal Crystal Grooming Achievement Awards, one for being Judge of the Year and the other for Groomer of the Year. And she's an industry educator. So when do you remember meeting Terry?
Oh, my goodness. It was probably 10 or maybe even 15 years ago at one of the bigger trade shows.
Yeah, I remember my first exposure to her, I believe, was a seminar, but it might also have been in the show ring. She certainly judged me more than once. You know, one thing I can say about her is she has always taken the time after the competition to go over my dog and give me hints and encouragement, and I really have always appreciated that very much from her. So here's our interview with Terry, and I hope you guys enjoy it, and we'll be back afterwards to close out the show. Today we're talking with Terry DiMarino, and she is a speaker and a judge and a groom team member and a Cardinal Crystal Award winner in two different categories and an industry leader and one of my personal heroes. So hi, Terry, how are you doing today?
Real good, Susie.
Okay, so I want to know a little bit about where you're from. Tell me about your history, your background, your childhood and that stuff.
New York City, born and raised. Bought my salon from a three-line ad in the New York Daily News. And this is a good reason to get out of New York City. I'm tired of shoveling snow. And when I was 21, I moved to South Florida and bought a dirty little pet shop that had a groomer in the back. And when she upped and left because she didn't want to pay her taxes, she had started showing me how to do face, feet, and tail and bathe the dogs. So I took on my first customer. It was a brown toy poodle, and the lady wanted a Town and Country. And I did what the pet thought said, and she cried when she picked the dog up. And I said to myself, I'll never let that happen again.
Well, that's a pretty cool start. So did you know you wanted to work with animals from the beginning?
No, I went into it for the wrong reasons. I went into it for hobby. I thought it was going to be fun and play with the puppies all day for all the wrong stuff. And it was a really, really rude learning experience. But I'm really pleased that I had a lot of good mentors, a lot of good direction. I met people that said, you know, you need to do this instead of that. And they just guided me around, and it was terrific.
Did you have pets at home when you were a kid?
Oh, actually, I had a cat. That was it. I was out to have a cat, so I think we all do this. We all wanted to be veterinarians, and we just don't have the grades, because we are more the right brain style instead of
the creative types.
We're the creative, we're the compassionate, and I'm glad that it went in this direction, because groomers get an opportunity to see the dogs. When they look good, they feel good. The veterinarians have to treat them when they're sick.
It's true. I came from that world. It's definitely better in the grooming side. So you jumped in with 2 feet, you bought your shop, and when did you start competing?
I actually didn't start competing until the mid-80s. I certified first because I had read a little bit about this certification program, and it was the first one. It was PPGC, which was the forerunner of IPG. And I did my study, and I learned about it, and I did one certification poodle, and my certifiers were Vivian Nash and Pamela Ritson, and there was an apprentice certifier named Liz Paul. And when I did my poodle, they said, you should try competing. And I said, there's contests, because I used to show dogs. And I'm like, oh, okay, we have a competition here. And my first show, I went best in show. Second show, I went best all around. And my third show, I also went best in show, and that was a national championship. And I beat Liz Paul, which is sad to say, because that has become a benchmark at the time.
So what did you show?
Dobermans in obedience and Tibetan Terriers in breed.
Cool. Okay, so you started competing and you did really well and you found it was your niche, and eventually you kind of grow out of all the competitions and you keep winning, and then you have to turn to education, right?
Pretty much. I was on the first hand-picked groom team, and that was in 89. And I was on three groom teams, but I was in 89, 90, and then 93, because I took a year off, did some judging, did some speaking, and came back. Now, a lot of people don't do that. You go out, once you're retired, and I think that's fair. So I really only competed for like 3 or 4 years.
What's your favorite thing about teaching?
Just seeing people be able to utilize the knowledge down the road. My mantra is if you remember something I told you 20 years from now, that, you know, crazy lady told you in the class, then I've done my job.
I think I remember things from at least 15 years ago, so you're doing your job just fine. What's your favorite place to go when you're going to the shows? Like your favorite location of show?
Favorite location of shows?
Yes.
You know, it's really funny because a lot of us in the shows were family away from home. Everybody is part of the family. I mean, Kathy Rose is my best friend. A bunch of these, Judy Brenton, all these people are my friends. So we look at each show, and I think we talk about shows in terms of restaurants and the stuff to do. And I tell you, the Tacoma show is really spectacular. This is becoming quickly a favorite. But what I and several other of us have done too, because we work really hard.
I know.
I mean, and we have to come in early and do a lot of speaking. We're on our feet all the time. We're beginning to rate it by the spas that the hotels will have sometimes.
Nice.
And we'll come in a day early or stay a day late and get a spa day in. And this hotel has a terrific spa. Hershey Lodge has a terrific spa. There's a couple of them. So that's, you know, we're ranking them by spas and restaurants.
Excellent margin. of measurement, definitely. So let's talk a little bit about being a judge. I think that would be really challenging, intimidating, and rewarding. So what are your feelings about being a judge?
That's a real good choice of words, because that pretty much rounds it all out. I actually get a kick out of watching a new judge that has come fresh from the contest ring, because you catch heat as a judge. If you didn't give somebody the right voice, you make one person happy. And I like to watch them when they get their hands on these dogs for the first time and like, oh my gosh, you wouldn't believe what I see. I said, that's what we see all the time. I really think it makes you a better groomer. I know it made me a better groomer when I started seeing things that I thought were normal and easy. And oh my gosh, that looks terrible. I do that on my dogs. I got to change that. So it really does make you a better groomer.
Cool. Well, we appreciate it because you always take the time to go over our dogs and point out the things so that we can improve. That's one of the biggest parts about being in a contest.
I try real hard. You got to keep those critiques brief. People don't remember a lot of it, and people have a tendency to pick what they want to hear, and I don't want them to pick the wrong thing because it's all about balance. You got to balance a good positive input with a needs improvement, so we always try to give a couple of good points as opposed to just all negative, negative, negative. And I really like it when a competitor comes up to me and instead of saying, what did I do wrong? Give me an opportunity as the judge to tell you what you did right, first of all. And it's better to approach a judge and say, how can I make this a first place dog? So let's look at it from different points of view. And also, I don't want to give too much someone to have to work on, because then inevitably these people will also go to other people who may not have had their hands on the dog, and what they can do is screw up what critique I have given the person, because then they'll later on they'll come back and say, well, this person told me this and that person told me that, and all I see is a poor competitor that's getting themselves so totally confused, because rather than focusing on one or two things at a time.
I have found that it's better to just pick one judge, which is kind of why I always pick on you, and I know you've seen me a gazillion times, because then you're getting consistent advice from them. You're getting what they're seeing, how they're seeing you change and grow over the years. So that's been a lot of help for me, so I thank you personally on that. So now we're going to wrap it up with our Puppy Cuts Pop Quiz, which is the Boxers or Briefs segment of our show. And it's easy stuff, nothing
boxers
too hard.
Boxers or briefs, it depends.
Yeah, there you go. So what's your favorite TV show when you get a chance to watch TV?
Oh, usually something on History or Discovery and something. Actually, CBS Sunday Morning.
Oh, that's a good one, actually. That's a good show. How about movies?
If I had to pick one movie, Young Frankenstein.
All right, well, that says something about you right there. What kind of music do you listen to when you listen to music at home?
I groom to country.
Okay.
And when I've got background at home, it's usually classic rock.
Cool. Pizza topping.
I am a purist. I want to see a good New York style cheese pizza. Anybody can gorp up a pizza and throw all kinds of garbage on it. If you can do the right balance of crust, sauce, and cheese, you have mastered pizza.
In my previous life, I was pizza delivery, and I gotta agree, the simplest is the best. Oh. I love a cheese pizza.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Okay, Coke or Pepsi?
Neither.
Neither. Okay, well then what?
Water.
Water. Oh, you're too good. All right, what animal would you be?
Oh, gotta think about that one. What animal would I be? I would be one of my dogs.
Very clever. How about vacation? Where would you vacation?
Oh, I'm real fortunate. My husband Jeff and I, we do have opportunity. We do a lot of time on our own. But I have to say that if I had the ideal vacation once again, it would be in the British Virgin Islands, renting that catamaran that we had a number of years ago and just sailing it on our own. And wonderful.
Nice. Woman after my own heart. Okay, and your first job?
My first job, I was in a restaurant, in a seafood restaurant.
There
or actually, no, a day camp. Oh, my gosh. Teenage day camp.
Oh.
Taking care of little rugrats and policing them around. And oh, my gosh.
Well, that's interesting. All right, and the big final question. What's your bad habit?
I snack too much, and yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of a bad habit. Yeah, I guess. You know.
Okay, it's tough when you're on the road all the time.
Don't eat right.
I have Cheetos in the armrest of my car. This little
concession over here is closed because I keep grabbing $2 and going over and buying the cookies, and I'm like, stop that bad. No.
All right, well, there's a little insight into Terry, and where can we find you online?
You can find me at Terry, T-E-R-I, at Barkley.com if you want to email me back. I don't, and I've got a personal Facebook page. I got to work on a business Facebook page, though, because I've got a lot of international clients.
They're giving a seminar on that right up the street.
Oh, I want to go see that.
Thank you so much, Terry, for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank everybody who listens here, okay? And cool. I hope to see all of the shows. Stop me if you see me, if you got any questions or input, and I'll see you in the seminar room. See you ringside.
Thanks, Terry. And there we go. That was Terry's interview. I hope you get to listen to it, Barbara.
I will. I'll make it a point.
Okay, good enough.
Hey, and I have something I want to mention before we close the show.
Okay.
Something, another follow-up on a previous show.
Okay.
Remember we talked about brushes?
Oh, I sure do.
Yeah. Well, I've had some new brush experiences lately, and I've been using the Chris Christensen Big Brush.
The Big Brush.
This is a slicker brush, a curved slicker brush with really long pins, and they have two of them. One, and the difference between them is how many pins and how fine. And I like the one with the fewer pins, and they're more widely separated.
Okay.
And I swear I'm going to call this the Black Magic brush. It's a black brush, and I call it Black Magic. It's got that nickname in my salon. I brushed out and detangled an Airedale yesterday that I thought was going to be a big job, and he's an older dog. I thought he was going to be sensitive because he was fairly well tangled up on the insides of his legs. This brush just brushed that out so well. And yes, it's a slicker brush, and you know I have attitude about that, but in this case, this is just a great detangling brush. We also use this brush on my very sensitive soft coated wheat interior. You know, those dogs can get just awfully touchy.
And
he came in kind of bad shape, and we brushed him out with the Black Magic Chris Christensen brush. So shout out, follow up on brushes. Here's a slicker brush that I've got to get behind.
So have you had to reset the pins at all on that? I noticed on the video on their website, you have to kind of comb them back into shape after a little while.
No, I haven't had to do that. But what I do insist is that the brush not be stored in a drawer with other brushes or in a basket with other brushes. We lay them flat on their back on the grooming counter. You know, I think brush care is really critical with those longer pinned brushes like that.
Cool. Well, I look forward to giving that one a try next time I see it. I should have tried it at the trade show, but of course, yay, I missed that. Doggone it. Okay, so just reminding you guys that on June 7th, for 2 weeks, we'll be taking a hiatus, and we'll be back after that, but we'll be back here next week, so not to worry about that. And I think that's going to wrap it up this week for the Groom Pod. Thank you for listening, and we hope you guys come back again. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Bye, Susie.
Bye, Barbara.
Well, stylists, it's time to sweep up the hair, clean out the tub, and turn out the lights on another episode of the Groom Pod. Remember to join the discussion group and be part of the show by liking us on Facebook at the Groom Pod. You can find Barbara online at groomblog.blogspot.com and at her shopping site, www.shop.bbird.biz. You can email me at Susie, S-U-S-Y, at thegroompod.com, or Barbara@thegroompod.com. Please tell all your friends about the show and leave comments and reviews anywhere that you can. And also, please support the sponsors of the show. They make it possible for us to continue on. So on behalf of Barbara Bird and myself, thanks for listening and see you real soon.
This has been a production of the White Dragon Podcast Network. For information on this, as well as our other great podcasts, check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/WD Podcast Network, email us at WDPodcastNetwork@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter at White Dragon PN.